Hi, everyone. Welcome to JNPO Classic here on WrestlingObserver.com. I'm Josh Nason, writer, editor, and podcaster for the website, host of Josh Nason's Punch Out. And this is our ongoing look at the WJAM MMA show Archives. And what that was a show I used to do back on ESPN New Hampshire back in 2011. Found a hard drive, found my old shows, wanted some place to put them because there was a really good audio, good interviews, and some good talk. And it's always kind of fun to look at historically what happened a long time ago, which was 6 years ago. And on this episode, this is the July 7th, 2011 episode. So on this, my trusty producer and co-host PJ Hewitt and I recapped UFC 132, which was at the time the best card of the year. Faber versus Cruz, that was their first time meeting. Leben versus Silva, and the resurgence of Tito Ortiz submitting Ryan Bader in a huge upset. We talked all about that. We had two interviews. You could say, it's really both sides of the coin. One was with Melvin Gillard, which was pretty much a disaster of an interview because he was golfing. There was a lot of wind. It was tough to hear, really tough to engage. And yeah, it just was not a very good interview. I was all in on Melvin Gillard as a huge star, potential future huge star in the sports. You'll hear about my gushing over Melvin Gillard despite the very terrible interview. I said very cool probably about 28 times because when you're doing these interviews, and this is live radio, you're just kind of rolling with the punches. You don't necessarily want to, cut the interview short, but it just was not good. So enjoy the awkwardness there. And followed that up with a really good interview with Joe Lauzon. And Joe Lauzon, this is obviously much different. We talked about an upcoming fight of his, I believe. I had my Chris Farley moment, if you remember his character from Saturday Night Live. When he basically, interview guys like, Paul McCartney and Sidney, you just kind of gushed over them. And I had that moment probably here with this Joe Lauzon interview. But we talked about his, at the time, he was doing these t-shirts for every event. So I kind of asked him a lot about that. Much different interview than Melvin Gillard. So enjoy that one. And also, one thing I completely forgot about, he had been talked about for a rumored fight with Charles Oliveira at the time, and also a potential short notice fight with Donald Cerrone. And it's kind of funny to kind of look back on this stuff now and think how what could have been and his reasons for not taking that fight. And it's just really interesting stuff. So this was an entertaining edition of the show. Again, one bad interview, one good interview, and a whole lot of good MMA talk. So without further ado, let's get to JNPO Classic WJAM MMA show from July 7th, 2011. UFC 132 has come and gone, and we'll give you the results and reaction from one of the best cards of the year. And we talked to not one, but two of the UFC's biggest lightweight stars tonight. It's Thursday, July 7th, and the WJAM MMA show is live. Hey everyone, Josh Nason, PJ Hewitt with you for the next hour to talk everything about the world of mixed martial arts. PJ, what's going on? Hitting buttons?
Yeah. How are you doing today, Josh? How was your 4th of July weekend?
It was great. It was great. It was a nice, relaxing time, split time between here and the great state of Maine, repping the 207 and the 607.
I was as well.
Yes.
In a strange coincidence, but not hanging out with you, though.
No. Once we had the studio, PJ and I, we go our separate ways. We don't interact at all. It's when we get here, the magic happens. Out of this, it just the magic is just...
It's like those old Red Sox teams where it was 25 guys, 25 different cabs.
Right.
Luckily, we don't have to pay for cabs every day.
Right.
We have our own transportation, but
I have a Camry. 25 guys, 25 Camrys. So we have a big show today. We're going to talk again about last Saturday's UFC 132 event, one of the best shows I can remember in a while in terms of decisive finishes and storylines leading in that paid off and more stories going on. It's been a busy 6 months, and maybe we'll get to that a little bit.
It's been a busy 2 months, really.
Yeah.
They've had a lot of cards with both UFC and Strikeforce just in consecutive weeks.
Five out of the last 6 weeks had UFC events. That's a lot. That's a lot. So also, we're going to talk to two of the guys that have won them those events. Second segment, we're going to talk to Melvin Gillard, one of the, I could say, rising prospects, but he's there. He's knocking on the door of a lightweight title shot. He had a big knockout win last Saturday. So we'll talk to him. And our final segment, we'll talk to a man that New England fans should be pretty familiar with, especially if you're into the UFC. Joe Lozon is going to join us. He's going to talk about his recent win and all kinds of good stuff from that. So a big packed show, so we'll get right to it. Overall, UFC 132, PJ, what's your opening thoughts?
Well, you said it. It's one of the cards here that had one of the most number of finishes I think I've seen in a very long time, and just distinctive finishes too. And we'll get into, I guess we can start right at the top, right?
Yeah, let's go for it.
Let's start right at the top.
There's no rules here.
We'll start with one that didn't have a decisive finish, but was a very good back and forth fight. The bantamweight champion Dominic Cruz versus Uriah Faber.
Great fight. One of the, I would say, right up there for fight of the year candidate, along with Gray Maynard and Frankie Edgar from January 1st. Awesome fight, back and forth. It was decisive in terms of, to me, that Cruz won for sure. He won over five rounds. The judges' scores were unique. One judge had it 50-45. That was Sal D'Amato. Another judge had it 49-46, and another one had 48-47. I had it, I believe it was 49-47, because I gave one of the rounds a 10-10, I believe. I can't remember off the top of my head.
Oh, it's a 10-9 must scoring, Josh, so you can't give 10-10.
Oh, you certainly can. I have my liberal at-home scoring, so it works that way. Cruz looked great throughout the fight. Faber looked great, just could not. I thought the fight was really, it came down to, I rewatched the fight in the first round. Faber tried to take down Cruz, and obviously Faber coming from a wrestling background. Cruz coming from a wrestling background as well, but Faber really known for that domination in that area. Try to take Cruz down, and Cruz was able just to really artfully dodge out of it, twist around, and in the fight's opening seconds. And I thought that really kind of took a little bit of air out of Faber. He was able to get a takedown late, but really the story was him struggling to get takedowns, Cruz being in and out, got knocked on his butt a couple times by two hard shots by Faber throughout the fight. Overall, it was back and forth. I thought for sure that Cruz won, and he did. The judges agreed, but it definitely wasn't a wide margin in terms of the scoring goes and anything like that. You're stunned silence, PJ.
I am, yes.
where does Dominic Cruz go from here? A lot of people want to see a rematch between the two. I don't know if that will happen. Business-wise, it makes a lot of sense, but we'll see. There's a few contenders out there. No one's really that marketable, I guess. You have Demetrius Johnson, who's won a few fights in a row. A lot of people think should be fighting at 125 pounds. Could be a fun fight. Not one I necessarily would headline a pay-per-view with. And then, again, a Faber rematch, that could happen. There's also some talk about maybe Brian Bowles. Brian Bowles fought in the undercard, looked really bland in doing that, so I can't really see him getting a shot. So really there's some question about who's going to be next for Cruz. For Faber, you know, Faber kind of goes back into the mix unless they gave him a rematch. But then again, I believe he's 0-3 or 0-4 in his last few title shots. So the question is really, has he earned it, or is he just earning it because of the name?
I think he's probably earning it because of the name right now. And, you know, with his jump over from WEC to UFC, Dana White pretty much said, you know, you win your first fight here, we'll give you a title shot. Uh-huh. And, well, he got his title shot. He hasn't really done anything with it. I think what's more interesting than where Cruz goes from here is where Faber goes from here. Because right now, I think I don't know if a rematch, maybe business-wise, it makes the most sense. But do you really think that he showed enough in that fight where he could come back after 3, 4, 5, 6 months, however long it takes, come back and win a fight against Cruz?
Here's my kind of policy on title rematches is that you have to decisively beat the champion, right? That to win the title, that's the goal. Most title shots that I see, with the, you know, the exceptions of, they got, you know, Lyoto Machida and Mauricio Shogun Hua, the first time when they fought, when Hua clearly won the fight and the judges gave it to Machida because one of them didn't score leg kicks for some stupid reason. Immediate rematch because the guy gets screwed, essentially. You look at Anderson Silva, Chael Sonnen, I could completely justify a rematch there. For 4.5 rounds, Sonnen had him beat, and Silva pulled off that win at the end. People could definitely justify a rematch there because it was that close. With this, it was close, but not close enough where you thought, okay, Faber deserves another shot at it. It was a fun, competitive fight, but one that I don't know if we need to see again. I'd like to see Faber earn it, and I think he needs to kind of go back in the mix and one or two more wins, I think he's right there.
What about a guy for Cruz, maybe Demetrius Johnson, Mighty Mouse?
Yeah, I could see that. I mean, he's won 2 or 3 fights in a row, and against good competition, Miguel Torres, he beat recently, although it wasn't decisive by some people's standards. But again, with these divisions now, they need a little time to kind of come together and have some contenders emerge. So again, if you're looking at having Cruz fight in 4 months, you know, a guy like Johnson may make a lot of sense. But we'll see what happens with that. Let's go to the co-main event. Wanderlei Silva versus Chris Leben. I picked Wanderlei Silva to win. PJ, you picked Chris Leben to win.
I did, and I said that was going to be a decisive victory, and I think I was a little closer on this one.
Winner, winner, PJ Dinner. Wanderlei Silva going down in defeat quickly, 27 seconds.
It did not take Leben long.
One of the intros for the guys took longer than the whole fight did, just 27 seconds. Silva came in, guns a-blazing, throwing hooks. Leben did the thing where he got hit, woke up, as he says, and hit Silva with a left hand. Left hand kind of wobbled Silva, and all of a sudden Leben just went boom, boom, boom with uppercuts. Silva fell forward and finished him off with a couple left hands to the head, and it was over, decisive. Edward Silva was so wobbled, he was trying to grapple with Josh Rosenthal. That shows you how messed up he was. And, oh, I mean, Leben looked great. It may be a question of how great Leben looked as compared to how bad did Silva look. And it looks like we may be at the end for Wanderlei Silva. And Dana White said as much after the event at the press conference.
From what I read, asked Silva not to fight again.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't just say, we'll have to talk about it, and he might be done. Went up to him and said, please don't fight again.
Right. So we'll see what happens with this. I would assume that based on the Chuck Liddell situations in the past, and Dana's taking a pretty hard stance, especially guys that he likes. He likes Silva. I don't think we're going to see him fight in the UFC again.
No, but he's a guy you could probably peg for maybe a tough coach coming up. Maybe not, obviously not this next one coming up, but in the future.
Yeah, the thing that they like with the tough coaches, though, is they like to fight. If they change that, I could see that. I mean, he's a guy that is such a personality, for a guy nicknamed the Axe Murderer, he's such a nice guy.
Yeah.
He's such a good guy outside, good ambassador for that sport, especially because he's Brazilian, he speaks the language, and growing that sport even more down there, he could really be an ambassador for it. He's based out of Las Vegas. So I could see someone like that. They can use him in a different role. I don't want to see him necessarily fighting again because I don't know if he has that much left. He's 35 years old, and I think his time has come. For Leben, he puts himself right in that upper echelon of 185. And a guy that every time they put him in a card, he performs, or at least it's one way or another. He either soars or he crashes and burns. And over his last four fights, the Stan loss for the TKO loss that came recently or in January. Other than that, he'd won three of his last four by KO, I believe.
No, the first one came against Jay Silva. That was a decision, a unanimous decision. And then Aaron Simpson and Yoshihiro Akiyama was a submission. Aaron Simpson was a TKO, yeah.
Right, so finishes, yeah.
So he was.
He's a good, he's a fun guy to watch and puts himself right in that mix. Really quickly, Dennis Seaver, Matt Wyman. Close fight, Seaver beat Wyman by decision. A lot of people thought that Wyman won. I rewatched the fight. I can see where people might give it to Wyman, but it wasn't an outrage by any means. I scored the fight a draw. Again, my 10-10 liberal scoring. I thought the third round was just, it was so close and that both guys didn't do it. My criteria is that a guy's got to decisively win a round or try to win with finish it. Just tried for stuff. Both guys were so even that third, I couldn't justify giving either guy the 10-9 round. So I scored it that way. Wyman was a little bit upset afterwards, basically threw his hat, shirt, walked out of the cage. I mean, shaking Seaver's hand. I don't like that at all. I just think no matter what, it's not his fault that you lost. It's the judges or your own fault you didn't finish. But the judges, don't be upset at this guy. So I didn't really like that much.
Yeah, that's what they tell you. Don't leave it to the judges. If you want to win, go out and finish them. Don't leave it to these guys who you said for the Machida Shogun fight, one judge wasn't scoring leg kicks. Mm-hmm. So you can't leave it to those guys. You have to go out there and prove that you're going to be the winner. And what was the final tally of spinning back kicks and spinning back fists from Dennis Seaver, by the way?
There was only one.
Just one.
In the third round, and it didn't connect.
No.
So that may have been, I mean, the Wyman in the second round was awesome on the ground. He got him down, throwing elbows through a slicing left that opened this big cut. There was all this blood. So visually, I mean, it was a fight for sure. But yeah, I think Wyman just kept going for these takedowns and just couldn't complete them, and I think that kind of hurt him. So we'll see what happens there. Tito Ortiz versus Ryan Bader. We were completely wrong, as was the majority of the world that thought Ortiz is going to lose. Did not happen that way. Tito Ortiz, right hook, drop Bader, couple shots, pulls in, arm in guillotine. The tap out at 156 of the first round, PJ. Tito Ortiz is a winner.
And one of the greatest celebrations after that win, too, where he dug himself out and pulled himself back out, returning from the grave style. So that was very, very cool to see. I'm not really a big Tito Ortiz fan, you know, and he was never really one of my favorite guys, but it was good to see him get a win, and especially in a win like that, to keep his career alive. So he's going to get at least one more shot to fight someone else, and maybe takes this conference from this win and goes out and puts a few wins in a row.
Did not expect it coming.
No.
Crowd went awesome. I was like, what?
And they were in Tito's corner even before he landed that shot that dropped.
He's a star.
That dropped Bader.
No matter what, that name still has cachet. When last week when we did the crossover segment with the show before us, when we mentioned Tito Ortiz, that was the name that they knew. You know,
right?
It's like the people know that name. Mainstream fans know that name. Even if it's years, they're like, he's still fighting, but that name still has some cachet. Same with like the Chuck Liddells and all those types. I don't know who you put Ortiz up against next. That's a big question. He can fight relatively soon. I mean, he could fight probably in the next 2 months because
he didn't get hurt.
He did not get hurt. Brian Bader got hurt, and his career got hurt as well.
Yeah, big step back for him.
Yeah, so I think maybe you kind of let August happen, those two events, and see who you might put him up against. There's some interest now. It's funny. A guy wins, and next thing you know, you may have a potential star in your hands.
Yeah, and Bader, his last two losses to John Jones and Ortiz, both by guillotine choke. So
yeah, he's gonna reset a bit. And the Jones loss. Jones is a phenomenon.
Yeah, yeah, you can't blame him for that.
He called Ortiz out and lost. You know, he did not look good. So you got to wonder, he needs to kind of reassess. I'm wondering if he doesn't try to drop down, maybe. I mean, he carries a lot of muscle. He's a big dude, but he carries a lot of muscle. I'm wondering maybe if he doesn't try to drop down at some point and go to 185, but that's conjecture for another time. Our streak, I don't know if it's our streak, our good luck charm, Carlos Condit, winner.
Yes.
Big KO of Dong Young Kim.
Awesome, awesome flying knee from Carlos Condit.
As he said last week on the show, we'll see what happens in the cage. Certainly did. Less than 3 minutes to beat him. I mean, this was just, there was kind of just, Kim didn't really seem to want to scrap, and Condit was into it. He hit him with a left hook early that I thought kind of sent a message to Kim like, uh-oh, this guy hits hard, and then faked with a left, and then you said it, flying knee, boom, boom, boom on the ground, done. KO winner. Carlos Condit.
Yeah, and a really fantastic knockout from Carlos Condit. And, you know, he bumps himself up a little bit in the welterweight division. And Dong Young Kim, who was kind of calling him out a little bit earlier in the week and saying that he really didn't, I don't know, he said didn't really respect him, but he said he wasn't in the same class or, yeah, you know, along those lines, like, yeah, well, this is the guy that I'm just going to go out and beat before, you know, I go to fight the real guys.
Right.
And it's
he fought
dangerous.
A real guy.
Yeah. We mentioned it with Ryan Bader. When you call someone out or say someone, you know, he's not in my league, you have to go out and prove it. Mm. With Rampage Jackson in his last fight, you know, saying that, I'm drawing a blank now, help me out. Who do you fight?
Matt Hamill.
Matt Hamill, thank you. Yes, I didn't want to say Mark Hamill again. Yeah. You know, he was saying in the build up to that fight, yeah, Matt Hamill's not in my league. I'm way better than he is. But he went out and he proved it that Matt Hamill was not in his league. Mm. So if you say things like that, you call guys out, you have to go out and win. You can't just let them come in because that makes you look even worse. And, you know, and even bring, I would say even steps you back, not, you know, in your career, but just personality wise and likable wise, you know, you say you're going to go out and kick the crap out of some guy and he hits you with a knee and you're done. Yeah, reevaluate. Mm. Maybe keep your mouth shut next time and say, like he said, we'll see who wins in the cage.
Strong words from PJ. PJ Condit. So Carlos Condit, he puts himself, he basically, it's all but assured he's going to get the next title shot, although he wants to fight once more, so kind of putting that title shot on the line. So we'll see what happens there. But Carlos Condit, big winner. And other fights on the card, real quick. Mel Gallard, we'll talk to him next break, defeated Shane Roller versus first-round KO. And then Rafael Dos Anjos defeated George Sotiropoulos, first-round KO. Less than a minute. Not good days for George Sotiropoulos. So having said all that, we'll take our first break of the evening. And when we come back, The man himself, Melvin Gillard from the UFC, is going to join us. This is the WGAM MMA show on New Hampshire's ESPN Radio, WGAM, the game. All right, welcome back, WGAM MMA show, and we're very honored to have on the line a guy that is, he's on the doorstep of greatness, I would say, in the UFC, and he's also on the doorstep or on a golf course right now. Welcome to the MMA show, Melvin Gillard. Melvin, what's going on?
I'm doing good, man. Just out playing some golf with the doctor today, trying to get some 18 holes in real quick.
What hole are you on right now?
We're at the Tamayo Golf Course and Resort out in Albuquerque. It's actually like a secluded course away from everything.
So keep you away from like the paparazzi and things like that, right?
Well, it's more of a private course, you know. And I mean, it's a real nice course. I mean, it's on an Indian reservation. So it's
not
like sacred land.
Very cool. Well, so talk about your recent wins here. I mean, you hell of a showing last Saturday night, knocking out Shane Roller in the first round. You're on a great roll. You're 5-0 on 4th of July weekend, you said, in Vegas in the UFC. And you're in a great roll right now. Tell us a little bit about what's going on. What's changed or what's happening?
Oh, man, it's just, you know, I mean, I'm with a great team. You know, I got a good team of guys, great coaches, and you know, I'm more focused now on my career instead of all the other stuff. So, you know, everything just kind of falls into play right now.
So, you've had two straight wins by finish by TKO in the first round and a knockout. You're earning bonuses here left and right, and really making a name for yourself. Do you feel like you've kind of turned that corner in this stretch, and that you're I guess title contention, ready to go?
Yeah, everything just falls into play right now. And, I mean, I guess you say God's watching over me, man. I guess it's my, you know.
So how did you celebrate the big win?
I did a pool party on Sunday at Nikki Beach with Head Rush. And then, just came back home with the wife, man. Didn't do anything crazy. I'm just out playing some little golf today.
Very cool. So how does one, I guess, celebrate the week after? What do you do? Do you take like some time off to kind of let your body rest and then get back in it? Or what's your schedule for after you fight?
I'm going to try to get back to practice as soon as possible, man. Like, you know, I'm still healthy. I didn't take any damage. So I'm going to try to get back best I can, you know?
Here with Melvin Gillard, UFC lightweight, and after this big win, you know, a lot of people are talking about title shot, and I know that you mentioned it a little bit, or at least you said, you know, it doesn't really matter right now. You're that you know, Frankie Edgar is right there in your crosshairs, but you want to fight in October in Houston. Is that's a big deal to you to fight on that card, isn't it?
Oh yeah, definitely. It is. It's a real big deal.
I know there's been a little bit of talk about potentially. So you can be on that, but you've been chatting a lot with Jim Miller on Twitter lately. Is that someone you'd like to fight? Or are we talking Dennis Seaver? Or you've been calling out some guys and talking some names. Anyone specific you want to fight on that card?
Come again real quick?
Sorry, yeah, I was talking about, you know, you've had some chats with Jim Miller on Twitter, and obviously you talked about, you know, Dennis Seaver at the post-fight press conference. Have you taught? I mean, would you prefer to fight one of those guys over the other? Or what's going on there?
Well, you know, I mean, I'm hoping I can get Jim Miller. You know, any one of them, you know what I mean? So, I mean, whatever happens, whatever they got in store for me, I'll take whatever they throw at me. You know what I mean? I'm not going to be real picky about who they give me. I'm just going to be patient and just wait for the opportunity and fight whoever they send to me.
Do you think you feel there's a lot of difference between what you did? You've been fighting a long time, and changes, I guess, the way you feel today and your approach today, as say opposed to like your early run in the UFC where you had a couple defeats in a row, and have you had a full mindset change, or what changed to have you go on this great run and get to basically on the cusp of a title shot?
Well, I mean, it's just focusing on myself, you know, and you know, stop taking my career for granted. Know that I'm in a position where I can do something great and have a legacy, you know. So I just stopped taking, like, really just took advantage of my life and give myself that opportunity to create, you know, that offer for me and be great.
Very cool. Now, after you beat Evan Dunham in January, you won a knockout of the night bonus. Is that, did you spend on anything nice, or do you put it away in the bank?
Actually, I'm kind of ended up doing it. But, you know, it's cool. I mean, one of the teammates I was with, I'm pretty sure I'll get someone with a bonus, but it was awesome, you know, just to see one of us come home with a bonus.
Very cool. All right, we're talking with Melvin Gillard, and Melvin, we hope to see you fight again in October, and we hope you have a hole in one on the golf course. I think that'd be pretty cool today. So
I hope so, man. If I get a hole in one, that'd be awesome. Before, then I'm gonna have to buy my cock and drinks all day.
Before we let you go, chance to plug any social media sponsors, anything like that?
Man, you know, thank my team, my coaches, my agency now with Authentic Sports Management. Those guys are great, and you know, they changed my life. You know, they helped me in many ways, just the one fight I've done for them so far. So it's a great thing, and thank all the fans and you guys for believing in me.
Awesome. Melvin Gillard, a guy that came off a huge knockout this past weekend, and someone you're going to hear about a lot more in the future. Melvin, thanks for joining us today, and good luck the rest of the way.
Thank you.
All right, Melvin Gillard, a little tough to hear, so we apologize.
It's a little windy on that golf course in down in New Mexico on the Indian Reservation.
Yes.
I think I got that much out of it at the beginning.
Yeah, yeah. So hopefully you were able to hear enough of that. I think I was able to make out what he was talking about, which is good. And he is, we'll have to have him on one of these days when we, when he's not.
playing golf with his doctor.
He's not a windstorm, but I think, so. Some of the things kind of, if you've never heard of Melvin Gillard, let's kind of take this opportunity to kind of explain a little bit about who he is. Guy's been fighting forever. He's 28 years old, and
he was the Ultimate Fighter Season 2.
Yes, he has been fighting since November 2002, and his official record or official amount of times that he's fought is 40. But realistically, he's fought close to 70 is what has been estimated with, you know, non-sanctioned fights and so on. He's had some issues in the past. He's been suspended for drug use before. Let me get this straight.
He tested positive for cocaine with his fight against Joe Stevenson back in April of 2007.
Right. And so that was, he was fined for 8 months, or suspended for 8 months, fined some money. He had kind of a tough background coming up, and he's one of those guys that he basically, you know, his story is kind of great in terms of how he's basically able to build himself a professional fighting career, and coming, he went to basically a spot in his life where he could have went one or two ways, and he kept fighting and he kept winning. He first came to the UFC back in, you mentioned Ultimate Fighter 2 back in November 2005. And since then, he's been in the UFC ever since, other than one fight outside in a promotional event. But, you know, early on, he was kind of like basically a 500 fighter. And really, in the past few years, he's come on strong. Started with, actually, he beat Dennis Seaver. And that's one of the things I wanted to actually ask him about, or I alluded to. So he beat Dennis Seaver back in July 2008. And at the post-fight press conference, he actually brought that up again because Dennis Seaver was there because he had won. And so they had a little bit of a discussion about fighting again and putting up, basically, he said he put up his purse to fight, which is unique. You don't really hear that.
Right.
And so he wants to fight Dennis Seaver because Dennis Seaver is up there as a 155-er. But he wants to fight in Houston at that October card, which actually we'll talk about in a second because there's a very interesting news bit that came out today about that, which I want to get to. But he's been on a roll. He beat Ronis Torres, Waylon Lowe, Jeremy Stevens, Evan Dunham, and Shane Roller. Three out of the last four by KO or TKO. He's on a roll, and a guy that is, he brings a personality. He's got charisma. I really think that he's there at this point where he's going to become a pretty big star in the sport if he can get the title shot and if he can win. But he's got everything. The fight's exciting. I think that he, you know, a lot of people give Frankie Edgar a lot of grief because he's kind of vanilla. He's kind of boring. You know what I mean? At times, he has fights a wrestling based style. And I mean, you've seen a fight for Vince BJ Penn twice and before that. And, you know, Melvin's a little bit of a different fighter and someone I think people really gravitate to.
Yeah, and I wouldn't go so far as to call Frankie Edgar kind of a boring fighter. I mean, he's so fast and so quick, fights at a constant 100% pace for the entire time. You saw that against BJ Penn in both of those fights where his cardio and conditioning were just so much better, and it helps him out so much. And Gillard's a knockout guy. In 19 of his 29 wins have come by way of knockout. So, you know, he looks for that. That's his style of fight. And fighting a guy like Frankie Edgar, who's, you know, a wrestler, more of a, could be more of a submission guy if he gets him down on the ground. It's be a little contrast in styles, but it could be a good fight.
Yeah, and I should rephrase. I'd say Frankie is not a boring fighter, but he is a guy that for whatever reason people can't get behind as a champion, no matter what.
Yep.
And it's, I don't know if it is a...
maybe it was because of the fact that, you know, that first win against BJ Penn, that you could have said, well, and then, you know, well, BJ Penn, he was a little sick and all this other stuff that came out, and he went out and he beat him again. And yeah, after that, if you can't get behind the guy who beats BJ Penn two times in a row, who are you going to get behind?
Yeah, there's just, there is something, and I've listened to other people talk about that people just, they can't get behind.
And I don't understand why.
I don't know what it is either.
If you see him fight, I don't understand why.
And he's a great guy. I've talked to him before. He's a normal dude that would, you think a lot of people would really kind of pick up on, but not yet. So we'll see. He'll have his chance against Gray Maynard. Some news came out about that this week. Gray Maynard's still not medically cleared to fight. Edgar is coming close, so it looks like perhaps October, maybe even November, for the third fight in their trilogy. But before we go to the break, I did want to mention about Houston in October. We have a pretty big fight set up for that card now.
We do.
Chael Sonnen.
Welcome back.
The return in a state that is pretty lenient with their athletic commission, I guess you could say, is going to fight the All-American Brian Stann. That is a very, very, very exciting fight.
Yeah, both these guys are very similar in their build and how they fight. And Chael Sonnen, if nothing else, is the best smack talker in all of MMA, or at least the UFC. Brian Stann is a guy who recently, you know, has built himself up as, you know, all American Marine type of guy, and everyone gets behind him. He's served his time in the military. This last season of The Ultimate Fighter, they kind of brought him in for almost like it was more of a promo. But to talk about how that helped him in his MMA career, and how close the training and discipline of being in mixed martial arts is right up there with the Marines. So that kind of was a natural fit for him to become a fighter. So this would be very, very interesting. Of course, Chael Sonnen coming off his almost victory of Anderson Silva. So
a long layoff.
So this will be a good test to get his feet back in the water and see how he does.
Right. And in case you're wondering, hey, why is Chael Sonnen? Why hasn't he fought in a while? Just Google his name, and you can find all the reasons. We only have some shady
real estate deals.
But this essentially is the number one contender fight to me.
You think?
Oh yeah, absolutely. 185. Yeah, I think so. I mean, these are two guys that are at the top right there. Stann's had a great run, and if he beats a guy like Sonnen, I mean, who else are you going to put there? You know, the fight with Okami that Anderson Silva is going to have in August, that'll be take care of that. So there's no other contender in the way, and you know, again, talked about rematches earlier. A Sonnen-Silva rematch would be huge. A Silva-Stann match would be massive. Both great fights, so they have a good position there at 185. So it's going to be exciting few months here, final 6 months of the year. So having said all that, we'll take our final break of the night, and when we come back, hopefully he's not on a golf course, but we'll talk to UFC lightweight Joe Lauzon. This is the MMA Show on New Hampshire's ESPN Radio, WGAM, The Game. Final segment, WGAM MMA Show, and we're happy to be joined by our second guest of the night, someone that we've wanted to talk to for a while, so we're psyched to do this. Someone that has been in the UFC for quite a long time, despite being pretty young of age, and is coming off a huge submission win at UFC Live, the Congo versus Barry event. Awesome to talk to New England native and the man, Joe Lauzon. Joe, what's going on?
Not much. How's it going?
It's going good. Are you on a golf course, perchance?
No. Why?
Good. Well, we talked to Melvin Gillard in our last segment, and he was on a golf course. And
okay.
It was a little difficult to hear him, so I didn't know if it was a golf day for UFC lightweights or anything.
No. I cannot play golf to save my life, not even a little bit.
So where are you at right now?
I am actually leaving my house, going to the gym.
Oh, nice. Okay, so you coming off a huge win over Kurt Warburton. You made it look easy, man. Submission win, and talk to me a little bit about kind of going into that fight, what you were thinking about, and then coming out of it, how everything played out.
The fight kind of went, you know, pretty much how we expected it to go. You know, I don't think we had expected it to go, you know, quite so well. But overall, that was pretty much what we expected. You know, we watched a lot of tape on Kurt, and I was a little bit tough because all the tape I could come up with, he was fighting southpaws. He was fighting lefties. So it's a little bit different trying to, you know, figure out habits and tendencies and things like that. But we felt like he wasn't really a guy that wanted to engage a lot. He kind of throws a couple punches, throws a couple kicks, backs away, circles away, gets into a clinch, and then, you know, hangs on and kind of tries to pull you around a little bit. So we just did a lot of work on, you know, one, if we got into a clinch, you know, being comfortable there, which it didn't even happen. And then two, slipping his punches, kind of drawing him in a little bit and then countering. And, you know, that was pretty much exactly how the fight went. He threw a couple punches, I slipped. You know, as he jabbed at me, I jabbed at him, slipped, came back right hand, left hook, and, you know, put him on his butt. And then, you know, at that point, you know, it's tough to recover and tough to fight back.
So when you talk about game planning, you know, mentioned about watching tape and things like that, I mean, do you have a tried and true method of how you guys go about breaking down someone for a game plan?
Yeah, you know, there's probably six or seven of us that all look at tape on our own, you know, so I'll get the, you know, DVDs from the UFC of past fights or whatever I come up with for tape. And six or seven of us all break it down on our own and try and figure out, you know, what we notice on our own. And then we all get together. And then we all, you know, try to see what overlaps and, you know, we all think, you know, what other people saw and all that kind of stuff. You know, we've gotten pretty in depth with it to the point of, you know, I'll have someone go through and they'll actually run statistics on all the combinations. So for all of his fights, you know, round by round, you know, what combinations they threw, what they lead with, you know, if they come out, you know, if they come out jabbed in right hand or whatever. And it's really easy to kind of, you know, pick up tendencies and habits. And then, you know, then we work on countering that and drilling, you know, how to combat that. When I fought George Sotiropoulos, we figured out that he started with a jab like 85% of the time. You know, it was always jab, 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 jab right hand. You know, he almost never started with anything except a jab. So we just worked on countering the jab over and over and over. And, you know, we had a lot of success, you know, dealing with that. So that's kind of the stuff that we're doing. I think we're a little bit more in depth with it than most people.
Well, now you get really fascinated. So stats wise, how long have you been doing this? I mean, what system do you use? And tell me a little bit more about this. I'm very intrigued.
You know, it's really just watching over and over and over and just, you know, it's real tedious. You know, but basically just keeping a tally, you know, writing down all the combinations you see the first time and then going back through and then tallying them up, you know, how often it came out and things like that. And it's a good way to kind of, you know, figure out exactly what they're going to do before they do it. Like I said, like with the Sotiropoulos fight, if we knew he was going to jab 80% of the time, you know, to start his combination 80% of the time with a jab, you know, it was really easy to just, you know, we work on countering that jab because we know it's going to come almost every single time. So then we work on, you know, just being, you know, real sharp on countering that and coming back with something or whatever we're going to do. You know, it's not like it's some, you know, amazing system. It's just, you know, breaking down and sitting there and doing it.
Talking with Joe Lozon, UFC lightweight. And Joe, I tell you what, I wish I was on your Christmas list because you have one, two, three, five straight either submission of the nights or fights of the night.
Yeah. I think I'm tied for the most overall, too. I think I'm Anderson Silva and Chris Lytle. We all get eight. So
that's pretty good.
I got to get ahead.
That's pretty good company to be in, my man. That's great.
Very good company. Yeah.
So, you know, you've been in the UFC for. Since what, 2006?
Yep.
You know, first, obviously, you kind of splashed on the scene against Jens Pulver in an era that was still, you know, MMA was still kind of coming to the mainstream. And obviously, you've been in for a while, had some big wins, some tough defeats. You know, you've been in the UFC, you feel like seeing forever. You're only 27 years old. You know, I guess, where do you think you fit in the whole picture and at your career and kind of where do you think you're at right now?
You know, I still think I'm, you know, getting into my prime. You know, that's kind of the big thing people ask. You know, I've been in the UFC for a while now. You know, where do I see myself? And, you know, honestly, I feel like I've gotten so much better with every single fight. You know, I've been doing jiu-jitsu since I was, like, 16 or 17. But, you know, boxing, like, I didn't really start boxing, you know, putting a lot of time into it, until I was already in the UFC, like, 2006. So I feel like I'm just getting my feet wet on all the boxing stuff. Like, I'm really, you know, for this camp in particular, me and my boxing coach, Steve Mays, we really kind of started to mesh. You know what I mean? Like, he could just say one word, and I knew what I had to do. And, you know, just, like, making little adjustments on the fly, you know, in the middle of sparring or whatever. You know, we really kind of, you know, get my feet under me now. You know, so I don't see it as, you know, as a plateau. You know, I'm still, you know, jumping with every single fight. You know, there's a lot of places for me to still improve. So just keep at it, you know, and I have no idea where it's going to take me. You know, it's kind of, I'm kind of in a weird spot because I beat some good guys and I lost to some guys too. But, you know, like I beat guys and then I've lost the guys that they beat. It's just, it's kind of weird. You know, but it is what it is. I just take it one fight at a time and, you know, just try to improve. That's all I really care about. I'm not caught up in the belt or any of that, you know, kind of stuff. I just want to keep getting better.
Now, where do you think you, the areas of improvement you need most? Where do you think you need to improve most?
I mean, everywhere, really. I think the biggest thing for a long time was my boxing. You know, my wrestling was pretty good. My jiu-jitsu was pretty good. My ground and pound was good. My submissions was good, all that kind of stuff. So the boxing was really, like, my big weakness, you know, but it's really coming around, you know, nicely now. So it's just a case of, you know, just, you know, putting a little time in here and a little time in there and just, you know, leveling up everything. You know, like I'm never gonna say, oh, my jiu-jitsu is good enough, I don't have to work on it anymore, or for my boxing or my wrestling. It's just, you know, pick and choose, you know, fight by fight on, you know, what we think we need to work on for that fight.
So let's go back to August 2010, a fight I was actually covering, and you're up against Gabe Rudiger in Boston, one of the just craziest atmospheres. I tell you what, I've covered all kinds of different sporting events. It was so loud when you finished him. I mean, being in the cage, that whole experience must have been awesome for you.
Yeah, it was awesome. You know, I'd always heard about people saying, like, they were feeding up the crowd and things like that, and I kind of thought it was just kind of, you know, just kind of playing up the crowd a little bit and, you know, playing up the hometown, but I legit felt it. You know, like, it was crazy coming out of there. And, you know, every single thing I hit Gabe with, it was like I was just getting a burst and a surge of more and more energy, you know, people going crazy. You know, it was phenomenal to be able to, you know, it's great to go and put on a fight, you know, like that, regardless of where it is, but to put that on, you know, in my hometown and all that kind of stuff, you know, so close to home with so many friends and family there, was just, you know, that was a dream come true. That was really the best.
Yeah, I mean, you were in the spot where, obviously, you know, Celtics have won championships, now the Bruins are champions, obviously, afterwards, but a lot of big things have happened there, and that was a great moment, you know what I mean? That's just, not to sound too New England homerish as we are, but that was a great moment, you know, it was awesome.
Yeah, you know, it was awesome. You know, it's weird, you know, thinking about it, because, like, I'd been to basketball games there, like, when I was in college, and, you know, been to Bruins games and things like that. You know, I've been to, like, wrestling events there, like, all kinds of craziness. And I never thought that I would be the one that everyone was, you know, the place was filled and everyone was looking at. You know, it was pretty unbelievable experience.
A few minutes left with UFC lightweight Joe Lozon. I got to ask you about your T-shirts. You have these great T-shirts. I saw they're in the UFC live fight. I saw some shirts and almost like Captain America design. I think for the Boston fight, it was more like a shamrock type thing. Tell me about the T-shirts.
You know, since I fought, going back to like my first fight in UFC against Pulver, we always did some kind of shirt. You know, for you know, all the people going out mainly, and then. It started out, it was basically, you know, just for all the people that, you know, flew out to fight with me. I've had a lot of people at just about every single fight. I had, like, close to 100 people fly down to Tampa with me. I had, like, 600 people that I sold tickets to in Boston. A fight in Vegas or wherever. I have probably a good 40 or 50 people that make it to every single fight. So my first fight, you know, I didn't know it was going to, you know, be such a good following all the way through. But for my first fight, you know, we made us some T-shirts, you know, for the event. And I'm just kind of like a commemorative kind of shirt, just, you know, for all the people that went, you know, for all my training partners and all that kind of stuff. And it took off, you know. I never expected that, you know, a lot of people would want to buy them, but then we started selling tons and tons of them. So I've just, you know, I've kept it up, you know, with each fight. And we've, you know, I got a whole closet full of different, you know, event T-shirts. It's been pretty cool. It's a good tradition. We started a long time ago, but we're going to keep going.
Now, you mentioned going to Celtics and Bruins games. We know you're busy, obviously, with your career, but do you still get a chance to follow the Boston area sports teams?
A little bit. You know, I really don't follow as closely as I used to. You know, like, I'm a huge, like, baseball fan, and I love to play football. I love to play hockey, you know, all that kind of stuff, but I don't follow closely enough. I'm all about playoffs, but... You know, a lot of times they don't catch all the normal season stuff.
Oh, I was going to ask you, see how what you thought the Red Sox, how they were doing this year. How can you get your opinion on that?
They're doing a lot better. We started, what, like 0-5 or 0-7 or something? You know, I think are we still in first place? I know we were.
Not right now. They're a couple games behind the Yankees, but they're right there.
Yeah, you know, to have such a... You know, we had a real rough start. And then, you know, they turned it around, you know, and now, you know, we'll see how they do going forward.
So who do you want next?
It doesn't matter. You know, I'll fight whoever the UFC wants. The UFC called me a couple of days ago about fighting,
you know, stepping in for a replacement fight, you know, it was only a couple weeks out, so we took a pass on it, you know, which they understood, you know, it was a short notice deal, you know, so, but I'll probably fight, you know, September, October, and I really don't care, you know, like, I like having time to prepare, and like I said, all the homework and stuff we do on people, you know, in preparation, but, you know, whoever they come up with, you know, we'll figure them out, we'll have a game plan, we'll be ready to go.
Yeah, because there was some rumor yesterday about Charles Oliveira, and then that seemed to dissipate really quickly.
No, that was, I don't know if he's Brazilian, and so his manager, I don't know if he's a first time going. But I don't know if it's like a lost in translation thing or what. You know, I never even heard about that fight. You know, and they're talking about November. I know they're not in November yet. So they actually, I got the call about stepping into priest Donald Cerrone. That was the fight. I got a call about, and you know, I just didn't want to rush into it. I had a couple of little, you know, nagging injury things from training camp, so I didn't want to go. But Charles Oliveira took the fight, which is kind of funny. I've got so many people asking about the Charles Oliveira fight, though. But it's completely false.
Interesting stuff. Well, before we let you go, Joe, give you a chance to plug any social media sponsors and tell the people how to find and connect with you.
Best way is on my Twitter, twitter.com/JoeLozon, and Facebook's real good too, facebook.com/JoeLozon. You know, those are the two best ways to, you know, kind of, you know, keep up on what's going on and all that kind of stuff.
Very cool. UFC lightweight Joe Lozon. Joe, we look forward to seeing you in the fall, whoever you fight against, and bringing some wins back New England. You know, with all these New England titles, I think it might be time for a lightweight title to come back.
I know. We got to get it, right? Maybe Kenny. Kenny's going to get 45. I got to try and get 55.
I like it. Thanks again. Thanks again. Appreciate it, Joe.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Joe Lozon. That was a great interview.
Yeah, very much of a bonus that he was not on a golf course.
Yeah. Not a golf course. And interesting that he was supposed to fill in or asked to fill in against Donald Cerrone. So that's interesting. That would have been a good fight. So hopefully we get to see that down the road. Now we kind of wish we'd seen that. But yeah, the short nose fights, as we saw recently, Rick Story and Charlie Brenneman and some of those things. Sometimes they don't work out as well as one would think, you know?
Yeah, and it seems to work out, at least from the fights that I've seen recently. Those guys who take, who are already on the card and who, for whatever reason, their opponent backs out, they take these short notice fights. Those guys who come in on short notice do fairly well, you know, and I think Joe kind of mentioned that, you know, he likes to prepare for these fights, and maybe that has to do a little bit why that happens, you know, that you prepare, you know, you spend weeks or months preparing for one guy, they back out. Now you have another guy. You have 2 weeks to prepare for him. This guy's just going to come in and just try to make a name for himself, because if he's a replacement fighter, more than likely he's, you know, on trying to make his way, you know, on the way up. He's not a named fighter. Joe's getting to that point now where I think he's, you know, fairly well known, at least by UFC fans. So he likes to take a little bit more time, likes to prepare, and that might be not Dana White's favorite attitude, but he respects it, and look for good things or big things from Joe Lozon coming up.
So before we leave, tell people where to find us.
You can find us at WGAMradio.com. Search under shows and find the MMA show. We have all our podcasts from previous shows there as well. You can find us on Twitter at WGAM_MMA. And also go to the blog, WGAMMMA.blogspot.com.
As always, thank everyone for joining us tonight. We have an awesome show. Talked to Melvin Gillard in our second segment. I want to thank him. Want to thank Joe Lozon, we just talked to, and quiet few weeks ahead, which is good.
Yeah, after almost, or at least a month and a half, pushing 2 months of MMA events every single week, we'll have a little bit of a break, but yeah. Get back into it soon.
If you're addicted, M1 Global, Friday night on Showtime, I will be watching it because I'm a dork. And Strikeforce coming up in a few weeks. We'll talk more about that. Dan Henderson versus Fedor Emelianenko. Dream fight. So, yeah, fun show. So, again, thanks to Mel McGlar. Thanks to Joe Lozon. Thanks to you for listening. PJ, thank you for being here.
Oh, thank you, Josh. We'll see you next week.
I'm going to thank myself. My voice.
You're deserved.
So until next week, keep your chin down and your hands up.
Good night.